artificially produced Arab countries, the division of Arabia, so to speak. I'm Leila Faramayazi, and you stay with me for answers. The past few years have been an era of provocation, as former US President Trump simply cherry-picked Jerusalem out of the Palestinians' garden as the new capital of Israel. That was in 2017, the year of his election. But apparently it wasn't enough to provoke all regional Muslim states. By 2020, five Arab League countries had established diplomatic relations with Israel instead. We visited the Society for Defending the People of Palestine, downtown Tehran. As the Quds session convened at the center, we got to talk to attendees. Sayyid Mohsen Mahmoudi was one. He is chief of the Islamic Propaganda Coordinating Council for Tehran province. To what extent would you say Arab states have helped the failure of any efforts in favor of the Palestinian people?
Unfortunately, due to the betrayal of the rulers and leaders of Islamic countries, the Islamic world has not been able to take a united stand about Palestine and the issue of Al-Quds and the occupation. Imam Khomeini said in his historical remarks that if all Muslims gather up and each pours a bucket of water, it would flood Israel. This is a fact, but why did it not happen? Because the elements of arrogance and exploitation throughout the history of Palestine have tried to pit nations against each other and turn the Muslim nations' leaders into their own mercenaries. They tried to prevent the fierce resistance put up by the Palestinian people from bearing fruit.
The five Arab states defecting, so to speak, were Egypt, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, and Morocco. Saudi Arabia didn't have to, as its very existence is owed to secret deals consenting to the birth of Israel. Saudi Arabia having been founded as late as 1932, as one of the artificially produced states mentioned. Arab action and inaction must have helped international efforts for Palestine to fail. Or perhaps those efforts have failed for the same reason Arabs felt they had to recognize Israel, U.S. bullying.
Throughout history and since its founding, Saudi Arabia, Al-Saud and Wahhabi thought have shown their dependence on others. Saudi Arabia has never been an independent country. It never had free-thinking rulers who would act in the interests of the Islamic world. The British attempts and later the U.S. presence led to their founding and the formation of the Wahhabi thought as infiltrators amongst the Islamic community.
Mr. Ramezan Khani is the Palestine Committee Secretary and Deputy at the Presidency.
Some of these neighbors, and indeed small countries, have established ties with Israel, like the UAE and Bahrain. They are insignificant compared to the will of their people and the resistance. In any case, given the fragility we see in Israel today, they try to establish ties and get into agreements with several countries, including the UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan. But in our opinion, this is nothing special, and they will not lead anywhere. As long as Haj Qasem Soleimani's soldiers are continuing down his path, will pursue resistance stronger than before.
UN General Assembly Resolution 3379 of the year 1975 did determine that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination, but it was strongly opposed by US officials. In 1991, the General Assembly effectively negated Resolution 3379 by adopting Resolution 4686. In 1991, I said, the year since which the United States has been the world's dominant military, economic, social, and political power, not to mention hosting the UN headquarters itself in New York City. Call it a coincidence, but the United Nations has been a factory of failures since. After all, it was not designed for the unipolar world we were left with after the fall of the Soviet Union. That is about to change, as are power dynamics in West Asia. Mr. Akbari is in charge for the Palestine Affairs Coordination Headquarters. Why have efforts by the international community failed in resolving the Palestinian crisis, or have efforts not been too determined?
As you pointed out, more than 100 resolutions have been issued by a majority vote against the Israeli regime, but have been vetoed by the United States, and none of them has been implemented. Sometimes they express regret that they don't pass. But the power of the Israeli lobby in the United States and the United Nations is so great that it does not matter to the Israeli regime what position they take, because they say something but take no action whatsoever. See, for example, the four-article plan submitted by the Islamic Republic of Iran calls for a referendum. It demands that the Palestinian people participate in a general election by regulations that are being observed around the world, and anyone who garnered more support takes up office, based on the West's framework of democracy, so they can live in peace. But due to the dominance of the Israeli lobby, the inability of the United Nations, and an extremist American bias for Israel, everyone remains silent.
The U.S. may have bullied and bribed the cousins into turning their backs on Palestine, but to Iran, an atypically non-Semitic, that is to say non-Arab state in the region, standing up for Palestine is both a matter of pride and national security. Iranians both sympathize and realize the depth of the Israeli dream of beginning with Palestine, only to end up occupying from the Nile to the Euphrates, establishing direct Israeli control over most or all of what it calls Judea and Samaria, that is, the illegally occupied Palestinian West Bank. In 1978, Imam Khomeini, leader of the Islamic Revolution of 1979, proposed the naming of the last Friday of Ramadan as Quds Day. This was welcomed by the Islamic world and all nations who see the loss of Palestinian rights as an undeniable fact. Importantly, in the 1970s, the Iranian resistance movement and Shia factions in southern Lebanon further consolidated with Palestinian resistance organizations. How it all began and what is are facts in hand, but the future also seems to be coming to the fore, with extreme measures speeding up historic change. Will Israel succeed in implementing its dark plans for the Palestinians, or is it overdoing it and moving towards self-destruction, given also the resistance movement is standing strong? What's amounted to Iran's regional influence today and its possible reviving of the JCPOA with America has been cause for serious concern on the part of Israel. It was during the Vienna JCPOA talks that Israel, without a shadow of a doubt, sabotaged Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. That concern must obviously have arisen thanks to Iran's military achievements and now the possibility of it returning to the world scene. Let's not forget, America is a ruling ground for Zionist elements behind the scenes.
Israel is insignificant today. As you saw in the past weeks, a missile hit an area near Israel's Dimona nuclear plant, where the most powerful batch of Iron Dome air defense is positioned. They can't do anything. They are yet to realize where the missile came from. They initially said the missile was fired from Syria at an Israeli jet, but overflew its target and landed in Dimona. In a separate statement, they claimed the missile was Iranian. Missiles fired from Syria would have to bypass Jordan, but that wasn't the case. They still haven't found out where the missile was fired from.
To stop annexation by now right-wing run Israel is going to take a lot more than suggestion. Talking of annexation, here's an instance Netanyahu maneuvered on. Annexation of the Jordan Valley was first proposed in the 1967 Alon Plan. But then, in September 2019, it was announced by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu as his plan, subject to the outcome of the September 2019 Israeli legislative election. Looking at the desperate situation of dead ends wherever Palestinians turn, it's no wonder Quds Day is respite. Mr. Qoddoumi is the representative of the Palestinian Hamas movement in Iran, as well as a medical doctor. He spoke with us at the usual pleasant location, displaying souvenirs of Al-Quds, or Jerusalem.
What's the significance of Quds Day 2021, given Israel has taken its action up a notch, including bombing the Natanz site, etc.?
When we talk about the Day of Al-Quds, when we call each other to such a noble issue to be united against the only enemy of the whole humanity and the only enemy in the region, that is the Israeli regime, then we can realize easily the importance of Al-Quds Day. You mentioned about Dr. Fakhrizada, Natanz, and General Soleimani, rahmatullah alayh. It's no more secret or fantasy that Israel is directly accused of those crimes on the soil which is far away from what's so-called the Israeli regime.
I'm not done yet, but I'll be stepping out of my own narrative for a bit to see what other media outlets have to say on the matter. Do stay tuned for a media review. Whatever the result, plenty has been said and done since Israel announced the statehood in 1948, May the 15th. That's the day the Palestinians recognize as their day of Nakba, or catastrophe. Now, Quds Day doesn't have to be commemorated only in Muslim countries. I-24 News moves to Germany. In Germany, organizers scrap anti-Israel Quds Day demonstration because of, we will see now, the event which has been taking place in the city since 1996 was slated for May the 8th, with some 2,000 people registering for it, including several Palestinian groups, according to local reports. Jewish and pro-Israel groups have long sought to have the event scrapped. Scrapped for good due to its anti-Israel and anti-Semitic nature. In Germany, calls for Israel's destruction are banned as a crime. Last year, the Quds Day demonstrations in Berlin were also cancelled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Before that, in 2016, Berlin banned the display of Hezbollah's flags at the event, arguing that the fact that it featured a firearm amounted to a call for genocide. To put in a word by the Palestinians themselves, the Palestine Chronicle reads, "Halt Israel's genocidal policies," is Quds Day message. As global solidarity movements in support of Palestine's freedom struggle begin preparations for the annual Quds Day commemoration, America's new administration under President Joe Biden remains stuck in the mud. Ethnic cleansing, the crime of apartheid, war crimes, and defiance of international conventions are parts of a catalogue of horrors which for decades have become synonymous with Israel. Israel's notorious security agencies, ranging from Shin Bet to Mossad, have long since eclipsed the terror associated with South Africa's apartheid era killers. That they commit crimes in the full knowledge of their political masters and with the complicity of the regime's military forces, IDF, in broad daylight is symbolic of tyranny and despotism. Having enjoyed immunity from prosecution during the Trump era, it believes that this will continue with the Biden administration. So far, all indications are that notwithstanding the stark contrast between the Republicans and Democrats, Israel's status as a holy cow binds them. They may differ on a whole range of issues, except Israel. Again, whatever the results, there have been plenty of international motions against Israel, or its actions at least. Irna says, HRW to forward findings about Israeli apartheid crimes to ICC, International Court of Justice. In a 213-page report released on Tuesday, May the 27th, the New York-based human rights group said the Israeli regime was the single authority with primary control over the area between the Jordan River and Mediterranean Sea, and methodologically privileging Jewish Israelis while repressing Palestinians, most severely in the occupied territory. Kenneth Roth, executive director of the HRW Human Rights Watch, said, "This detailed study shows that Israeli authorities are committing the crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution. It is coupled in the occupied territory with systematic oppression and inhumane acts against Palestinians living there," he said. The report is based on robust sourcing, including human rights documentation, official planning documents, and statements by officials. AFP cited Omar Shakir, the Israel and Palestine director at HRW, as saying that there had been warnings for years that apartheid is around the corner. "I think it's quite clear that the threshold has been crossed," Shakir said. And that would be it for this segment. Do stay tuned. Back to Iranian support in present times per se. That's in 2020. Iran came up with a logical proposal that Palestinians be allowed internationally to hold a referendum to decide the fate of the occupied lands. That would mean a vote by all the original and historical inhabitants of the occupied territories, both those who are still there and those who have been displaced. This would include Muslims, Christians, and Jews and their descendants, all original Palestinians. Iran even presented its initiative entitled National Referendum in Palestine to the United Nations. Today, Jerusalem, as Trump's preferred capital of Israel, is not the only sore spot with the people of the region and Muslim world. The United States recognized the Golan Heights as part of Israel through a presidential proclamation signed by Donald Trump on March the 25th, 2019. This made the United States the first country to recognize Israeli rather than Syrian sovereignty over the Golan Heights region.
Trump took a very hurried approach and tried to do a wide range of things in a short time. Israel has been pursuing the policy of expelling the Palestinians and latching onto power for the past 7 years, but has tried to adapt its approaches to what has been needed over the course of time. This has been ongoing until today, when they have proposed a two-state solution so they can lay the groundwork for achieving their goals. But Trump proposed the issue of the West Bank, the occupied Golan Heights, the deal of the century, and the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Al-Quds simultaneously in a very short span of time.
Soon after, in 2020, came the notorious bound-to-fail deal of the century, what Iran calls treason of the century. This Trump or Kushner plan was officially titled Peace to Prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people. It claimed to be the road to resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, or rather, Israel-imposed conflict with Palestine. Practically, the plan would have bought out the Palestinians for measly comforts, nothing close to even a realistic two-state solution. Comforts for their country. It was on 22nd June 2019 that the Trump administration released the economic portion of the plan titled Peace to Prosperity. The political portion was released in late January 2020.
They did not succeed in the deal this century, and in the case of the occupied Golan Heights and the West Bank, they only incited the anger of Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. More importantly, when Donald Trump adopted the policy, he thought he could have the support of many Arab nations. He believed with a strong Arab support, he could back Israel. They believed that instead of negotiating with 1% of Arabs, who are Palestinians, they had to clinch agreements with the 99% so they support Israel. Although some heads of state did so, opinion polls show the issue has only aroused the disgust and the opposition of Arab nations against the United States.
It's no wonder even whatever Palestinians might have been considering a two-state solution boycotted Trump's peace plan and hence had him scrap U.S. funding for Palestinians to pressure them into allowing Israel's expansionism. Expansionism used in relation to Israel highlights the fact that Israel is a modern-day invading power and has no business taking from or sharing with Palestinians. And any West Asian accepting the notion of Israel or a dual Israel-Palestine state is doing so just to take what he can, or out of sympathy with fourth-generation now Israelis. Eyes are now turned to current U.S. President Biden and his role in the peace process or no process. How much he can do is to be seen. Israeli right-wing parties, which dominate the political arena, reject the two-state solution and call for the annexation of about a third of the West Bank. And the Jerusalem Post newspaper listed a rundown of 11 senior Jewish American officials designated for top roles in the Biden administration. The one low casualty way would be if Joe Biden realized the importance of keeping the UN alive by rising above America's misuse of its vetoing power, largely speaking. The number of UN resolutions condemning Israel are more than the total number of UN resolutions against the rest of the world. By 2020, 43 of 46 anti-Israel UN Security Council resolutions were vetoed by the US. And so, instead of Israel stopping in its tracks, it charges on with its agenda.
knowing it has undivided backing from the U.S.
As history has shown, and as we have seen in the last 7 years, the American politicians have a common policy on the issue of Palestine and support for the Israel regime, and that there is no difference between Democrats and Republicans except for the methods they adopt. They appear to have tactical differences but have the same goal in practice, which is supporting Israel.
What measures has been taken by the previous American administration head by Donald Trump, which has been surrendered or changed by the existing Biden administration? Nothing. They did not return the embassy to Tel Aviv. They did not surrender to the announcement of Jerusalem as an eternal united capital of Israel. They did not do anything about the settlement expansions and the settlement issues inside West Bank and Jerusalem. They did not lift the embargo and sanction over Gaza. They did not do anything.
Even justifying the occupation of Palestine and bearing it down memory lane by prolonging the process cannot whitewash what's going on under Israeli occupation. Even with corona rampaging, there's no respite for Palestinian kids behind bars with no charge. No less than 4,500 Palestinians are in Israeli jails. Of the thousands behind bars, 430 are administrative detainees held without charge or trial, including 180 children and 41 women and girls. There are 550 prisoners suffering from various illnesses, including 11 with cancer, 7 with kidney failure, and heart disease.
The irony, or maybe the racist issue, I would say, in that Israelis are claiming that they are giving the vaccine to the Palestinian, but on the other hand, they are giving the vaccine to those Palestinians who are working in the occupied area where they are having an interaction with Israeli citizens. This is why Israel is giving the propaganda that they are and the beautiful face that they are giving vaccines to the Palestinian. No, they are not giving the vaccine to every Palestinian. In the same area like in Al-Quds, why they are allowing the vaccine to the Israelis and they are not allowing the vaccines to the Palestinians, where they claim their own custody, they claim their own government over Al-Quds, over Jerusalem, why they are doing this discrimination?
But like I said, Israel could be overdoing it with the expansion and inhumane pain it's inflicting on Palestinians, as well as needling other countries such as Iran. And this may backfire on it, especially as the predominantly Muslim region is more determined than before, with greater military might and know-how.
Today we see that Palestine and the resistance are stronger than ever. And we also see Israel, whose slogan used to be dominance from the Nile to the Euphrates, is now trapped within its own fence, unable to govern itself. We are witnessing the events in occupied Palestine. It has reached a point where Israelis and the Jewish residing in Palestine are getting fed up with the status quo. Despite all the concerns and all the betrayals committed by some Muslim nations, the Palestinian resistance is still strong.
That's it for today, but the Palestinian cause lives on to be voiced and fought for. We will be covering developments as we do all sorts of topics, so do tune in at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
And we have not sent you, but as a mercy to the world.
I want to be a servant of God like Muhammad.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Muhammad, Rasulullah.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You're welcome to this program, Like Muhammad, with me, Javed Akbari. We are going to discuss some important narrations and some important ahadith and sayings from our infallible imams and from the Ahlul Bayt about the etiquette of fasting or the adab of fasting sawm. One of the ahadith that has been reported and also found in the book Sunan al-Nabi, authored by Allama Tabatabai, is a report narrated from As-Sakuni, from Imam Ja'far As-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, from his fathers, peace be upon them, that when the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, fasted and did not find any sweet to break his fast with, he would break his fast with water. Now, this report suggests that it is good, it is recommended based on the prophetic sunnah and based on the prophet's lifestyle and etiquette that one break his fast with something sweet like dates, okay? And dates are especially recommended for breaking fast. And nowadays we see that Muslims, of course, following the Prophet's lifestyle, break their fast with dates. Now, if dates are not available, if dates are expensive to buy from the market, one can break his fast with something sweet. Because if you use sweet to break your fast with, of course, a sweet thing actually suppresses the hunger, and it suppresses the appetite and causes one to eat less food. So it is generally speaking, it's recommended to break one's fast with something sweet, especially dates. It has also been reported in some narrations that the Prophet, peace be upon him, would sometimes break his fast with raisins. Raisins are also sweet, and of course, raisins are available and they are cheap and can be purchased from the market. Raisins are also good. Now, there is yet another hadith from Shaykh al-Mufid. Of course, Shaykh al-Mufid is also one of the early Muslim scholars and one of the early Shia scholars, because there are some important scholars who lived in the early period of Islam, like, for example, Kulayni. And of course, the three Shaykh, like Shaykh Saduq, Shaykh Mufid, and Shaykh Tusi. And these are some of the very, very prominent Shia scholars who lived in the early period of Islam, close to the time of the last Imam or the last Hujjah. Of course, the Imam of age, may Allah hasten his reappearance. These are the scholars who have written important books, like Kulayni. He's written his, for example, his Al-Kafi. Sheikh Saduq has written his Man La Yahzuruhu Al-Faqih. And Sheikh Tusi has also written his, for example, Tahdhib and Istibsar. These are some important books, of course, and some of the most authoritative and most important and reliable sources belonging to Shia, the religion of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salatu was-salam. When it comes to some of the reports, narrated by Al-Mufid, Sheikh Al-Mufid. He has reported in his Al-Muqni'ah, narrated from the family of the Holy Prophet, it has been said that it is recommended to have suhoor. Suhoor means the meal served before dawn in the month of Ramadan, or even in any month, because if a person wants to observe fast, he has to have suhoor in order to have the strength and the capability to work during the day, to stay up, and to have the energy to walk. And of course, if a person does not eat the suhoor or the pre-dawn meal, then he is less likely to feel very much lazy and lethargic during the day. And that's why it is recommended to have the pre-dawn meal, which is the translation of suhoor. Now, the Prophet is used to serve something or to eat something before dawn. And even if it was only a glass of water, he would drink it. So that suggests that it's important to have something before dawn. Also, it is narrated that it is better to have dry dates. And of course, because this is what the Holy Prophet used to have in his suhoor. Okay. If dry dates are not available, then anything that is available should be used and should be eaten. It has also been reported from the Holy Prophet that he used to eat al-harisa. Al-harisa is an Arabic word which refers to a kind of, let's say, cereal food, food made of grains, and or maybe it's called bulgur and meat. So that's the food which is made from grains and meat. That food is very common in the Middle East, and the Prophet used to eat al-harisa more than any other food, and he would also have it for suhoor. Generally speaking, when it is in the month of Ramadan, and when the days are longer, or even when the days are shorter, it is important to have suhoor or the pre-dawn meal in order to have the energy necessary for doing a job or for staying awake. It has been reported in Al-Faqih. In Al-Faqih, man la yahdhuruhu Al-Faqih. Of course, man la yahdhuruhu Al-Faqih is one of the important authoritative sources written by Shaykh al-Saduq. It has been documented and recorded in Al-Faqih that when the month of Ramadan, for example, entered, the noble Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, freed all the prisoners and gave something to all the beggars. So I think the hadith and the narration is quite clear, and there's no need for explaining it. The Prophet, peace be upon him, released the prisoners and gave food to the beggars. He reached out to the beggars and tried to help as many beggars as he could. There are other narrations and reports which we will cover in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. The blessed month of Ramadan is the best opportunity for the growth of man's spiritual capacities. But before anything, the heart should be cleansed of pollutions, just like a gardener who first weeds and then sows the seeds. One of the evil characteristics and pollutions that should be avoided, especially in Ramadan, is anger. The anger that is not controlled is like the blaze of fire which will burn and destroy man. Anger has been likened to fire in most of the hadith, a fire that has originated from the Satan. That's why, if an angry person does not control his anger, it will destroy his body and spirit soon. Experts of ethics say that as soon as a person gets angry, his intellect will subside and he will utter words or show behaviors that are not normal. Uncontrolled anger can lead to violation of others' rights or break of family and marital bonds. A very important way for harnessing one's anger is patience. Patience is the key for repelling the Satan and gaining God's pleasure. As you know, fasting has a lot of effects, but one of the best ones is patience and tolerance. A patient and tolerant person usually does not decide or act recklessly and rashly. In continuation of discussing the injunctions of fasting, we touch upon the fast of parents that have been nullified. After the death of a father, if he has failed to fast some days or months, his elder son is obligated to fast instead of him, even if the father has failed to fast out of disobedience of God. As for the deceased mother, if she has failed to fast some days or months, it is not obligatory for the elder son to fast instead of her, although it is recommended. If the elder son has died, it is not obligatory on other sons to fast instead of their parents. If the elder son cannot fast due to disease or what else, he can hire someone to do the job. Dear listeners, we have fasted for 24 days. One of the most important states of servitude before God, especially during the blessed month of Ramadan, is a long prostration. Only God and His chosen servants, His messengers and imams, know what has been saved as a reward and what bounties will be bestowed upon those who perform long prostrations. On the last 10 nights of the blessed month of Ramadan, the faithful recite special supplications that have been taught by the infallible successors of the Prophet. So, let us recite together tonight's supplication. O disposer of the night as a garment and the day as a means of livelihood, and the earth as a cradle and the mountains as nails. O God, O dominant, O God, O all-compeller, O God, O hearing, O God, O near, O God, O answerer, O God, O God, O God. The best names, the loftiest parables and grandeur and bounties belong to you. I ask you to bless Muhammad and his progeny and place my name on this night among the successful, and my spirit with the martyrs, and my good deed at the highest point of paradise, and my evil deeds forgiven. And I plead to you to grant me certitude which accompanies with my heart and faith, which takes doubt away from me, and make me satisfied with what you have distributed for me, and give us good in the world and good in the hereafter, and guard us against the punishment of burning fire, and give me a sustenance on this night, your remembrance and your gratitude, an enthusiasm toward you, and returning to you, and assisting me in what you have assisted Muhammad and progeny of Muhammad, greetings to him and them.
اللهم رب شهر رمضان.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the preaching.
Allah,
One of the most esteemed etiquette of this month for religious scholars, jurisprudents, congregational prayer imams, and preachers is to preach and admonish. And in summary, the scholar who has spent years of his age in the path of achieving knowledge and asceticism, and through the experience of these long years, has identified Satan's astonishing tricks as well as the self's unique plan for entrapment of human beings, it would be appropriate for him to preach and admonish, and should not deprive the people from his guidance and rich experience. It is not just limited to religious scholars, brothers and sisters. You all have a duty. Although, of course, religious scholars who have went to seminaries, who have studied formally Islam, they have a bigger role to play and a more important duty. But remember, you're all part of it. Islam, it encourages all the believers out there to preach Islam, right? Preaching Islam is a noble thing to do. Never feel ashamed, never feel shy, and never feel reluctant. But remember one thing. When you're preaching Islam, try to preach, number one, things that you know for sure are part of Islam. Don't just make up things. Don't just try to make Islam cool, right? Try to stick to the letter of the law. Number two, try your level best to practice what you preach. If you don't practice, then the problem is it's going to be ineffective. Inshallah, you're going to get reward for what you preach, but the best way of preaching according to the teachings of Ahlul Bayt is through practicing it.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing preaching in the holy month of Ramadan. Now, if you look at preaching, it is something that the prophets and imams did, right? So it is not something that is simple enough for everyone to do. But at the same time, Islam provides an opportunity for everyone to preach Islam. And we said, try to do two things. One, preach what you know is correct, 100% correct, according to the teachings of Islam. Second, try to practice it. If you want it to be effective, then practice. The gains and benefits received by others through these preaching, guidance, and admonishment cannot be accomplished through any other religious deeds, as it is therefore from this consideration that the religion has recommended it profoundly. And in this regard, there are plenty of traditions narrated from the sinless imams, which cannot be described here. Of course, in preaching and leading the congregational prayer, what is more important than any other thing is sincerity, purity, and abstinence from egotism and hypocrisy. Therefore, from this consideration, the one who wants to perform this act, first of all, must examine himself thoroughly. And if does not have any other motive except Allah's pleasure and people's guidance, he should undertake it. But if he discovers other than this, then instead of engaging himself in preaching with sincerity and purity of heart, he should engage himself in self-purification and self-refinement. Brothers and sisters, it is important. We don't preach to become famous. We don't preach so that we turn it into our livelihood and our business. No, we preach for the sake of Allah.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
But you know that there will be better, there will be stronger.
Greetings to resistance, greetings to the land of olives. Greetings to Palestine. Greetings to the land of pain and the oppressed. Greetings to the Holy Quds. Greetings to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The land of divine messengers. Greetings to resistance and to courage. Greetings to the tears of bereaved mothers. Greetings to the youth whose blood has been spilt. Greetings to the youth and children who stand against the cruel Zionists. For more than 7 decades, Palestine has been beleaguered. And Palestine has been occupied by the most cruel people on earth, the Zionists. But the countdown has already begun for the child-killing regime. This prophecy, the divine promise in the Holy Quran, where the Almighty says, "And we desired to show favor to those who were abased in the land, and to make them imams, and to make them the heirs." The father of the Islamic Revolution and founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, designated the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day. Imam Khomeini asked the Islamic nations and governments to close ranks, to unite against the bloodthirsty and usurper Israeli regime. His call on the Islamic Ummah coincided with then-Egyptian President Anwar Sadat's betrayal of the Palestinian cause through signing of the scandalous Camp David Accord with the fake Zionist regime. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, said in his message to the Islamic Ummah, "I invite all world Muslims to choose the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, which can determine the fate of the people of Palestine, as World Quds Day. In a ceremony, declare Muslims international solidarity and support for the legal rights of the Muslim people of Palestine." Dear listeners, the Islamic Revolution of Iran has been the supporter of the oppressed and downtrodden since its victory in 1979. Imam Khomeini called the Palestinian issue as a top priority for the Islamic world even before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and always supported the Palestinian cause. He called Israel a cancerous tumor which must be uprooted. Imam Khomeini could see how dangerous the Zionist regime was in its expansionist policies. He used to caution the leaders of the Arab world and Islamic countries against the ultimate goal of the fake Zionist regime, namely to occupy the lands between the Nile and the Euphrates in a bid to obliterate all Islamic lands and massacre Muslims and enslave them. following the ideals of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also prioritized the issue of Palestine for the Islamic Ummah. He has called Israel a cancerous tumor. This description of Israel shows the fact that this regime will continue its criminal life at the cost of destroying others. The Zionist regime first usurped 5% of the Palestinian territories, but now it has occupied more than 90% of these territories. Devastations of Palestinian homes. Coercive expulsion of the Palestinians from their homeland. Wide construction of Jewish settlements. Extensive construction of illegal Jewish settlements on Palestinian lands. Murdering and incarceration of brave Palestinian youth. Even Palestinian children are imprisoned in Zionist jails. Intensive economic siege on Palestinians, especially the people of the Gaza Strip. Harsh restrictions on Palestinian mobility are all part of the Zionist regime's mistreatment of Palestinians. Palestine and Gaza have a history of over 45 centuries. The land is sacred for Islam, Christianity, and Judaism because many divine messengers got their divine mission there, and it was the first Qibla of Muslims. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is also the place of ascension to heaven of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Although this year, due to the coronavirus pandemic, there won't be demonstrations in the streets of Islamic cities, the issue of Palestine remains the top issue of the Islamic world, no matter how many servile leaders of Arab countries betray the Palestinian cause and normalize their ties with a diabolical regime in Tel Aviv. Most of the Arab leaders have betrayed Islam, the Palestinian cause, and the Holy Quran, as they have turned their backs upon the Palestinians and united with the Zionists. They have become the minions of the Zionists and are Israel's partners in crime. Last year, these mean leaders capitulated to the former US President Donald Trump and his bid to reduce the financial aid to Palestine. Shukri Bashara, Palestinian finance minister, said last year that the assistance of Arab states for Palestine had decreased by as much as 81.6%. The Al Alam television channel announced that Arab countries had helped $38.1 million from January to August of 2020, while this figure stood at $198.3 million in previous year 2019. The Saudi regime's help to the Palestinians only amounted to $30 million in the first 8 months of 2020, whereas the same figure was $130 million in 2019. For sure, the Saudis, Emiratis, Bahrainis are partners in crime with the Zionist regime. What adds salt to injury to the Palestinians is the fact that the United Nations, the UN Security Council, and other international bodies have had no role in alleviating the pain of the Palestinians, despite their vociferous claims of human rights, rights of women and children, and so on. This is while if a Jewish person's property is lost or an incident takes place for a Jew somewhere in the world, these same international bodies, including the United Nations, will express sympathy for them. Brutal expulsion of the Palestinian people of Yemen and other Muslim lands, are not included in the charter of these so-called international organizations. For more than 70 years, the Israeli regime has committed the most heinous crimes in history against Palestinians. But the United Nations has kept silent. Its affiliated bodies have tacitly approved these Israeli crimes. And even if they have issued resolutions against the Zionist regime, these resolutions have never been binding. They have been mere scraps of paper and a cause of mockery by Israel as it has been emboldened to carry on with its crimes. The United States, Israel's principal backer, has used his power of veto at the United Nations to back up the Zionist regime. And the Zionist regime has continued with its nefarious crimes against humanity. Like the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini,